This is Dr. Holly Lucille's Mindful Medicine. Here's Dr. Holly Lucille.
Hi, all you mindful listeners out there. Thank you so much for spending part of your day with us. I'm so excited about today's show, as I am always, because I feel like, I don't know, we just have the best guests. Ladies, this one is going to be for you. Yep, I'm just going to say that right off the bat. We're going to learn about taking an active role in your healthcare. You know, I love that. It's kind of what the show is all about, right? Just trying to open up and use our minds to make great and better decisions about our health and wellness for ourselves and our family. And we're going to do this today in sort of a Chinese medicine way. And if you've been listening to me for a while, you know that as a naturopathic doctor, I do practice in my practice a system of medicine that is rooted in a philosophical sort of tenet of first do no harm and identify and treat the cause and use the least invasive methods to diagnose and treat and all of that stuff. But that I feel that there's such value in all systems of medicine, certainly traditional Chinese medicine. And so I have this fascinating doctor, Eric Karchmer. He's a PhD and an LAC, so that's a licensed acupuncturist. His fascination with Chinese medicine actually started over 30 years ago when he ventured to China to teach English. And his passion eventually translated into an unusual career in what he calls academic medicine. So I'm going to bring him on right now and have him explain exactly what that is. Dr. Karchmer, welcome to the show.
Hi, Holly. Thank you so much.
Yeah. So, Eric, talk to us a little bit about this academic medicine. It's a fascinating term. I don't think I've ever heard about it before. But yeah, what happened?
You know, it's actually, I take it from my dad. My dad's a doctor of Western medicine. He's an MD. And he always told me that what he practiced was academic medicine. So he does a lot of hospital clinical work, but he's very active in research. Of course, it's very different clinical work and very different research than what I do, but I always thought it was a great term. And I always thought, I always kind of, when I got into Chinese medicine later in life, I sort of envied him. I was like, wow, I feel like I'm often choose between what I do for research, which is anthropology, or kind of what I do in my clinical practice, which is Chinese medicine. But to me, the two, you know, totally go together. And I wouldn't want to do one without the other. So I was like, God, I wish I could have a career like my dad, practice academic medicine.
Yeah. So explain, explain to me I get that they go together, but how so? Flesh that out a little bit.
I just feel like the two, to me, the two just really inform each other. So you don't need to study anthropology to practice Chinese medicine at all. But when you're practicing Chinese medicine, you have to really think hard about like these concepts that are totally foreign, hot, cold, deficiency and excess, the organs, which are not the organs of the anatomical body. You know, so I think having something like anthropology helps you to sort of get a broader perspective, help to like think through these issues without getting maybe totally tripped up with like some of the theoretical questions there, like how can we have a body that isn't really anatomical? But likewise also, you know, Chinese medicine like totally informs anthropology. I think very much like what you do. It's totally holistic. So it's a very different approach to, thinking about the health, thinking about the health of our bodies, thinking about illness and disease. And so when I'm teaching anthropology, like I'm thinking of Chinese medicine all the time because it's always, it's this example of a different way of thinking about the world. And, anthropologists, you know, desperately need that as well as many disciplines do.
I love the way that you use your mind. It's what it's all about.
I'm a professor at Appalachian State University, so often reading about like different medical systems or problems in biomedicine. And to me, I'm always looking for like these more holistic ways of thinking, even if it isn't Chinese medicine. And, I think that's what's neat about naturopathic medicine is that, we have to start from some different places. And so, and when we do, sometimes we get to like really different results, and that's exciting.
That's great. Now, so at the renowned Beijing University of Chinese Medicine, you studied women's health and spent a considerable part of your career in that part of the world. When you say that women approach their monthly cycles, and women, this is where I was saying, hey, this is about you, because this cycle is so phenomenal to me, and it's definitely a metric of health. When I see a woman, and one of the biggest things I want to know is, how is your menstrual cycle? Because it tells us so much. So, but when you say Absolutely. That women approach their monthly cycle in Asia much different than how we do here in the West, what do you mean?
I think for anyone who speaks Chinese, and even if you don't, it doesn't take too long, before you just realize that women really think about things like their menstrual cycle very differently. It doesn't take too long to kind of start hearing different stories. And one thing, for example, that's that you'll see very commonly is that, and even this is even as a man, where I'm not privileged to the more intimate conversations, but women will tell you about how they're being very careful about the food they eat when their period is approaching or during their period. They'll be much more cautious. They'll be cautious about even their activities. They're not going to, they would say, sort of expose themselves to cold or the elements, if you will. They might be cautious about having, say, an acupuncture treatment even during the middle of their menstrual cycle. So they're cautious in that way. Food is a big part of it. And if you spend time in China too, you notice that people are, very particular about their diets, about how they eat, about having regular meals. One big concern, would be foods that are considered cold. So hot and cold are not, categories that we're used to thinking about in the West. We don't think of foods as being hot or cold, other than sort of purely the temperature. But these are sort of metaphors for thinking about the effects food have on your body. And they're super useful once you kind of like wrap your mind around them. And so, during a woman's menstrual cycle, in China, she'll be very careful about eating foods that are considered cold. Things that are cold are constricting and therefore can cause pain. So those are, there's a lot of little things like that. But I think women definitely, I think in general women have a more proactive approach to their menstrual cycle in China than they do here in the U.S. And this is certainly, some women are very proactive here, but in general, they just feel like this is something I need to manage. I need to regulate it as best I can through food and diet and lifestyle. And if I do that, then, there's a better chance that I'm not going to have more serious problems down the line.
Yeah. It's fascinating. And I think that proactive approach, because I do see, I wrote a book in 2004 called Creating and Maintaining Balance, A Woman's Guide to Safe Natural Hormone Health. And it was really about when we entered menopause for the most part, and even perimenopause, trying not to pathologize those natural mm-hmm. periods of a woman's life, but just understanding the influences of why we have in the West become so symptomatic during these normal hormonal changes. But you say in Asian women tend to take a more proactive stance, and using these concepts of heating and cooling. So specifically, you mentioned food and not eating a lot of cooling mm-hmm. food, but how do women in Asia approach their monthly cycle?
In terms of food, as you said, I think this concept of balance is a nice idea, and it's not exactly the word you use in Chinese medicine, but if we were to take a word from Chinese medicine, that would be really crucial. Here would be this idea of like maybe modulating or regulating or adjusting or modifying. That it's all one word. Food is just kind of part of that. Now something you'll see very commonly in China is that, just regarding something like this idea of cold, would be that, you very quickly realize that most Chinese friends will be reluctant to like have like a cold glass of water, like filled with ice. If they want water, it's either going to be like room temperature or maybe preferably hot water. That's also very, very common. And people might drink hot water like on a hot summer day even. So just that's like even at that most basic level, people and the kids will grow up. You know, their parents will admonish them. You know, you can't have ice in that drink. Which is, I don't know, exactly the opposite of the way I grew up. I thought like, you know, a cup of soda with a ton of ice in it was like that was like as good as it gets. they begin with just kind of simple little things like that. Now, of course, it doesn't mean like every woman has like a perfect menstrual cycle, and things can definitely happen that are beyond your control. Food is such an important part of it. I think maybe the place where you might see it the most obviously too is actually postpartum. And in postpartum women, after you give birth, like in Chinese medicine, that's recognized as a state of like deficiency. Like that's a profound sort of blood deficient, we would say. And, you know, your average Chinese person doesn't necessarily totally understand the more technical Chinese medicine perspective of it. But what's very, very common and very popular in China these days is that after you give birth is that women will do what's called sitting for a month. And when you sit for a month, you're just supposed to sort of nurse your baby. You're not supposed to even leave the house if you can avoid it. And you're going to be sort of fed all these like, nutritious, rich, foods that are going to sort of help build your body back up as you recover from, labor and delivery and also adjust to like nursing too, which is a big drain on the body too. And so people take that period very seriously.
That to me is fascinating. And honestly, I think it's the way it should be. And one of the complaints that I've had, I think for, you know, decades is that I don't think as a culture that we give the time or honor the time for women to recover from doing such an amazing job at, you know, conceiving and then, you know, building this womb and nourishment and care for this zygote that turns into this embryo that, you know, and then birthing this baby. And then, of course, like you said, getting ready for breastfeeding, which is a big toll. And I think that's what leads to such a high incidence of folks having postpartum depression and other specific diagnoses like that, because I think they don't have a time to recover and heal. And I think it takes a toll.
I mean, there couldn't be truer words, you know, from the Chinese medicine perspective. And we maybe sometimes expect ourselves to recover, like, maybe there's a competition to recover ever faster with, like, Instagram photos of this or that person who, you know, lost all their pregnancy weight in so many weeks. And, the healing part is really important, and it takes a and even if you're feeling good, you know, that like you need to kind of have respect for the process, I think, a little bit too. And so the consequences, there can be consequences if you don't give your body time to recover. And even if you do, it's hard, you know. I feel like, a woman has two or three children or more. That's a toll. And it might show up, and the way that might show up can vary from woman to woman. So you might not sort of see like something immediate. Postpartum depression would be, I agree with you 100%. That's frequently, you know, just the result of some, you know, of one manifestation of our body, of a woman's body trying to deal with like, you know, the challenges of labor, birth, and breastfeeding.
An entirely dependent soul, you know, these babies are completely dependent. Yeah. And I think, you know, it's to that point.
Totally.
But also, I think that as well, it's almost like the nutrient depletion, if that nourishment isn't back, if, as you say in Chinese medicine, they don't sort of sit for that month and build back up, that we lose the building blocks of our neurotransmitters. We lose the building blocks of, you know, our biochemistry that just, you know, is driven through cofactors, which are vitamins and minerals. And then everything starts to add up a bit.
Yes, absolutely. And actually very interesting, just coming back to the cycling back to the food question here, like you'll see women eating like lots of eggs postpartum. That's very nourishing. But also another very popular dish that probably wouldn't go over too well here, but it kind of gives you a bit of helps maybe help people think here is a pig trotter. So people will take pig trotter, which is kind of fatty and just, you know, full of, you know, very rich kind of, nutrients. And they'll somehow, you know, do a slow cooker sort of, approach to it. But that would be like a prize. And it also thought to promote, the production of breast milk a little bit too. I think other fatty foods would also be kind of good, but people are like, I need like fat. I need like these, rich, nourishing foods in my body.
In your concept of heating and cooling, when we talk about Chinese medicine, and of course you've mentioned that during a woman's cycle, not to have cooling, you know, foods or beverages, would this be a time where more warming food is appropriate in this recovery sort of repair time?
Yes. You mean during the woman's period, or are you talking postpartum?
No. Yes, really? Postpartum.
Actually, either to be honest. But yes, you typically you would want now there are so cold is often more of the concern than heat in kind of the gynecological world in Chinese medicine. Although you do have problems where you have where heat is the problem and you need to cool it. That might be, for example, like a very short cycle that's, you know, less than 21 days or something like that. That's typically a sign of some kind of heat. But more often cold is the problem. And so typically, whether it's like you're struggling with menstrual cramps, or you're trying to recover postpartum, typically you want foods that are going to be a little bit more warming. So for example, cooking with something like ginger is considered a very warming food would be, but also just kind of a lot of your spices in general are all tend to be on the warming side. Those can be, those would be sort of helpful things. And when you're deficient and weak in a postpartum state, you're very vulnerable to cold. And I remember, very distinctly my wife, for example, after she had her, I'm not forgetting if it's the second or third child, but just, struggling, with, these sensations of like, cold, like feeling profoundly cold, and we kept thinking, are you getting a cold? Are you getting sick? And she wasn't getting sick. It was just like, there was this sort of the, you know, she was struggling to recover from, labor and delivery and had that, and sort of that external cold from the environment was just really, causing her a tremendous amount of pain, and she felt physically cold too. And at that time, then we sort of is a little beyond sort of just food, but we're doing some herbs and things like that. But yeah, typically you'd want like more warming things to help respond to that.
All right. So you're right. So once you get your mind kind of wrapped around these concepts of cooling and heating, you can actually utilize them. I know that I blend aspects of Chinese medicine into all of my sort of, treatment recommendations, just because some of the concepts, mm-hmm. you know, are so helpful. Now, let's talk about Chinese herbs, because in my opinion, they've been around a long time. I mean, mm-hmm. far longer than Western herbs, and I think extremely powerful. But I know that some folks have said that they're kind of like snake oil. But why are these folks wrong?
Well, they don't know what they're talking about. And I think it can be a little bit hard to assess and understand Chinese herbs really, particularly if you're coming from some sort of biomedical perspective or some sort of pharmacological perspective. So I think a couple things that are interesting about the herbs is one, that they're understood along the same lines as what we've just been talking about. So if hot and cold are ways of diagnosing a patient, or excess and deficiency are another two key categories, the herbs are kind of categorized in similar ways. And they're either considered cooling or warming, and sometimes they're neutral. And then they have other properties that may be draining or supplementing. And so they're understood through an entirely different system of knowledge, if you will. And then two, what's also very interesting about them is that they're, one each. Well, the second part is one that each herb itself is this very complex thing. And so it's not like it's a single active ingredient. It's often multiple active ingredients in any particular herb. And then together with that, they're also almost always used in combination. So Chinese medicine is really based on formulas. And so the formulas will be anywhere from combinations of sort of three or four herbs, that's sort of on the smaller side, up to a dozen, but sometimes even more, 20 or something like that. And so this, often the secret too is sort of in the combination. And the part of the combination is, what's sort of special about that is that, the herbs are, and there's a tremendous amount of thought that goes in, and this is where there's, as you said, kind of centuries of scholarship reflecting on sort of how we combine herbs, basically. So there's a lot of thought about, like, what herbs combine together very well, and either to support certain properties or to balance out other negative, perhaps, side effects that might be a problem. So balance itself, which is kind of like the goal of, like, the medical system, right, to help our bodies achieve better balance, is also sort of like foundational to the formulas itself. So the formulas themselves are, the classic formulas are sort of these beautiful examples of balance. So that to help your body do something, but do it in just the, go as far as it needs without sort of overdoing it any one way. So the usual experience taking Chinese herbs is that if it's a good fit for the problem, is that it's that you've generally women will feel, or men if we're talking about something beyond gynecological issues, you just feel sort of better and better as you recover or from whatever problem you're dealing with, as opposed to we often have the situations where we have to take, let's say, an antibiotic, and that maybe takes care of the problem, but causes some other side effect, upset your digestive system or things like that. So side effects are generally very minimal in Chinese medicine if you're getting like a good formula that's well balanced. And then third, the last part for the, sort of the snake oil critique doesn't really recognize is that because the system of diagnosis is so different in Chinese medicine, sort of the formula that works for the formulas aren't sort of designed for like our disease categories of today. They're framed and designed for like very different ways of thinking about illness. And so, the same formula that, you might use for a woman's menstrual cycle, could actually be good for certain skin problems. A formula that I like to use often for like PMS, also had like really great results treating like, IBS with it. And, or it might be, really great for, a woman whose periods are sort of getting later and later, or it might be great for, just like dealing with stress at work or something like that. So the formulas kind of also are designed for very different things too. So that's part of where people miss the boat on those critiques.
Right. And that's why we need guidance from folks like you. And we're going to look forward to your book. That's I know you're going to finish your manuscript, Orientalizing the Body, Post-Colonial Transformations in Chinese Medicine. We'll see that later this year. And then folks, just to hear more from Dr. Eric Karchmer here, PhD, LAC, you can go to his website at mydaolabs.com. That's mydaolabs.com. And you can also find him on Facebook at facebook.com/Dao Labs. So fascinating work, sort of blending this anthropology that you have a doctorate in, and then with this, these concepts that, like you said, once you just get your mind around it, it's so helpful. And women, you can apply these concepts to, to taking more of an active, proactive, I would say, care, role in your healthcare, like we're trying to do on Mindful Medicine all the time. So Dr. Karchmer, thank you so much for being here. Folks, until next time, we will see you later or hear you later, or you'll hear me later. Okay. Keep tuning in. Thanks so much.